Hello and welcome to Matchsticks and Microphones for the week of February 15, 2011. I'm your host, Justin Azevedo. I'm on Twitter at AzevedoJ and at thefourthlineblog.com. Who's with me this evening?
I'm Ryan Lambert. I'm from Flames Nation and Puck Daddy. I am on Twitter at TwoLinePass.
I'm Duncan Clark. I'm from Hit the Post. I'm on Twitter at GDuncanClark.
And I'm Walk Invisible here from also from hitthepost.ca and on Twitter at hitthepost.
Cool. Let's get right into it, shall we?
The smoke.
So we start off the smoke with just a quick recap of the last week's games. Ottawa, Flames beat them 5-2 in Calgary. Pretty convincing win after the first period. Struggled maybe a little bit during the opening minutes of the game, allowing Ottawa to take that early 2-1 lead, but came back with the four unanswered goals and beat them down pretty handily. Anaheim on Friday, overtime loss 5-4, and that was kind of disappointing for Flames fans. Glenn Cross taking that penalty with not very much time left on the clock, and then Timo Solani potting it in with on the power play, and then in overtime with 18 or so seconds left. That was pretty painful. Lost in Vancouver on Saturday, 4-2, but I mean, the Flames played well during that game. They definitely played good enough to win, especially against the league's top team. And then the Valentine's Day massacre against Colorado last night, 9-1 in Colorado.
I think, well, apart from the fact they hung 9 on Colorado, I don't think anybody really should have been too surprised by any of those results. I mean, Ottawa's a terrible team. The Ducks are about as good as the Flames. Vancouver's markedly better than the Flames, and the Avalanche is pretty goddamn bad. So, you know, to have the Flames come out 2-1-1 from that, I think that's about as much as you could have reasonably expected. Maybe you think they could have won the Anaheim game, but it happens, I guess.
The Vancouver game was a tough one to watch. Because, you know, for all the optimism lately, I always try to put things up against the, you know, the ultimate test when it comes to the Flames. Like, are they really going to be able to, for all the fun lately that we've been having watching the team play, and it has been the first time all year I've really had fun watching the team play. And then we got that win over Vancouver a couple of weeks ago on Hockey Night in Canada. This was sort of a similar situation, and you really want it to be repeated. And then when it came down to it in the third period, they had to put something together. It just wasn't going to happen. Now, I mean, you know, granted, Alex Tanguay is in the lineup for that game, and I think, you know, for a few, that was the case for a few of the games this week, and I think that hurt them against Anaheim as well. But the thing is, I mean, Tanguay is still just a guy with 40 points right now, and when you can take that one guy out of the lineup and you have that much trouble being creative with the puck, it was a little disheartening. But at least we had the comeback with Colorado. It's always fun to win a game 9-1.
Agreed with all that. I mean, they've been playing a decent brand of hockey, as they like to say. It's been fun to watch. The Vancouver game to me was really, even though I consider Vancouver quite an elite team and Calgary not so much, I think they kept up, and I was actually proud of the team for sticking with it.
So we'll move into our next segment,
the bonfire.
So we'll move into the bonfire now, and I kind of struggled coming up with a topic for this week, so what I decided we'd do is that we'd go through two-thirds of the season rankings or grades for each of the players on the team that have played for the Flames this year. So just before we start, I have 28 total players, but six of them I've already put down grades for. I'm assuming there's probably not going to be much contention from this. Brody, Sutter, Boma, Meyer, and White all get incompletes just based on the amount of games they played or them being traded or whatever during the middle of the season. So I don't think there's any opposition to that.
I will not grade players who are no longer on the team. They don't deserve my attention.
So the
wait, can we grade Vonnins? Yes. Is that going to be possible?
So that's the next guy I had. I have him down as an F, but
I totally disagreed.
Yeah,
I said plus exactly, because so. Nothing better could have happened with that guy besides getting injured the very first. I mean, obviously we don't wish anybody injury. Like, I'm not saying that, but for him to not have to play any games is amazing.
Yeah, let's be honest here. He fucking sucks at hockey. Like, he does not know how to play hockey. He goes up there and he gets his head beat in.
I'm actually looking at this. He got 8 minutes in the one game he played.
This is a guy from Latvia who plays in the NHL who could not make his Olympic team.
Oh, that's really pathetic.
There are 8 people in Latvia. 8.
they don't even have enough for 2 full line substitutions.
If Ivanov doesn't get hurt in that game, I'm not sure you're seeing Michael Backlund play on this team as much as he has this year. That's probably the space he took. If you take a look at the other guys around him in the lineup, yeah, lately with Boma coming up and all that sort of thing, I mean, who knows how things go down, but Backlund gets a lot of ice time this season because Ivanov is not around.
Yeah. So we'll start off with the players. So the first guy is Mikkelsen. So I was thinking probably just a good old B for him, because a number 6 defenseman, if you're not noticing him, he's probably doing his job. And I don't really notice Mikkelsen when he's on the ice.
And I would take Mikkelsen over Stamkos every day of the week.
I agree. I mean, 100%, I'd put Mikkelsen in over Stamkos any day of the week. I just feel like, I mean, the number of games he got into and then the amount of time he's had, like, this is one of those Dutter moves that I don't really, had never got from the start. It doesn't seem like Brent really likes him that much. you know, he's just sort of taken up space. I would have, you know, this is one of those things where if it's not TJ Brody, I would much rather have had pretty much anyone who you're going to actually develop come up and play in this role. You don't need another 6'3 guy who's going to sit on the bench most of the time. I grade him as incomplete because he just hasn't got enough ice time, really. 22 games, it's not enough.
Yeah, I would say incomplete as well. I mean, you just don't get as many looks at him as I think would probably be fair. But what, like you say, he's been perfectly serviceable in the role he's played, and he's only 23.
So we'll go with an incomplete for Mickelson, and yes, just based on the amount of games. So the next guy was Conroy. I think Conroy is probably a solid C+, B- guy. Once again, comes in, does everything that he's asked for. I mean, he wasn't asked that much, and plus he's on a minimum contract anyways. So
by the same criteria, he then should be a solid B, should he not? He's done everything he was asked of him.
Yeah.
Same grade or an incomplete?
Well, I think B's probably, I mean, wouldn't you say like it's a C if you're doing everything asked of you?
So I would go C+, just because, I mean, the amount of games.
There you go. Yeah. It works.
I think he was struggling a little bit in the games that he played. I think he was showing his age a little bit towards the end there. They didn't win the last couple of games he was inserted for. Yeah, I'd give him maybe a C.
He took it so well when they waived him in terms of retiring. I think, you know, from all accounts, he wasn't complaining when he wasn't getting in the lineup. And this is a guy who, you know, like, this is, I mean, I've had the ruminations of a blog entry in my head about Conroy for a long time. This is a guy who I've loved ever since he first arrived on the team, because you can never say a bad thing about what he was trying to do out there. And I think that continued into this season, just based around what guys are saying. You saw, you know, the sort of the class. He's got some terrible shirts, but but that was the only thing that was bad about him getting off the ice, is that you had to look at the shirts, because he did everything you could possibly ask him. And I'm glad that he's a guy who's going to be in the front office. I actually do believe that he's a guy who understands the game. He had, like, I don't always agree with the Don Cherry from most times. I don't disagree with him, but what he said was he was a guy who worked for getting his spots all the time. This is one of those guys you can tell is a smart guy. He wasn't the most talented guy. He was a smart player. And I think he's going to be the kind of guy you want in the front office. I'm going to give him a higher mark than that, because in terms of doing what he's asked to do, I mean, if you're going to ask a classy team guy to sit out essentially the whole year and then send him out of the minors, and he's got the class to walk away gracefully, I'll do better than that. I'll give him an A just for old time's sake.
Average it out. Let's go with a B minus or B. So next guy, Steady Steve Staios. So, I mean,
what order are we working in here?
Just the amount of games that they've played.
Okay.
So we're
F
working
minus.
Less, least amount of games. So Ryan says F minus. What are you thinking?
The Flames haven't won a game. Well, other than last night, I guess. Last night, notwithstanding, the Flames have not won a game with Steady Steve in the lineup in regulation since November.
And remember the first game he got into this year? I believe the Flames gave up 4 goals and he was a minus 4.
Well, when he was first traded last year, the first 4 games, he was on the ice for every single goal against in 4 games. Every single one.
This guy fucking blows.
I mean, he's had some decent plays. He makes some okay plays sometimes.
Scored in Philly.
He can skate. He has a stick. He apparently owns equipment.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'd give him an F.
I'd go D minus, just because he did injure his hip or whatever the fuck, and did give us those 20 games where he wasn't playing. So he did give us that this year,
which was most of December.
That is a big contribution.
Yeah. So
not unlike Radis.
He's an F. He doesn't. He adds nothing.
Okay.
Takes up space. He doesn't even add. Like, honestly, you know, remember in the playoffs in 04, because I don't know, there's no Flames discussion that doesn't bring up 04 since 04. They ran my favorite former Western Hockey Leaguer Brennan Evans out to play about 2 minutes a night for a couple of games just because they had nobody
else.
Oh,
I remember that.
I would rather have Brennan Evans than Steve Staios on the ice, and I'm not exaggerating. So that's an F.
That's an F. I think that's a resounding F.
So the next guy, I hesitated to include him, but it's Kotalik, and I don't think he gets any other grade other than F, correct? Can anybody justify anything higher than an F?
I would rather have Prust, and I think that
Prust plays hockey, though. Like, he can actually skate, I think, puts effort out sometimes.
I think Prust is going to be in the league a good 8 or 9 years. I sort of made my feelings about Prust in the last day, but I wouldn't have made that trade one for one.
Well, you loved Prust. You've always loved Prust.
I love Prust. Seriously, I do, and I still do, and he's the Rangers are lucky to have him.
Kotalik was maybe Sutter's worst trade ever.
I would think it's definitely top three.
Yeah. So the next guy is Adam Partey, and I was thinking incomplete just because he has had a lot of the year derailed by injuries, but with his shoulder and now this upper body injury that happened two or three games ago against Chicago. If we were going to give him a grade, I think a C is also good for him.
I'd give him a B. Yeah, I think he's underrated. I think he's a big guy. I think he's a good skater. I think he's got some offensive. He's shown some offensive ability. I'm not saying he's going to be a sniper, but you know, he can join the play, join the rush, and score. Or you know, he's got good puck movement. I don't know. I'd give him a B. I think that if and when we trade him, which I'm guessing is going to be in the next couple weeks.
Depends how hurt he is, though, right?
I guess.
There are limits on moving players if they're injured or whatever.
But it's one of those things where I'd be curious to see what he would do given more opportunity.
I think I'm with you. I mean, I'd probably say more like a B minus. But, I mean, I think that run of games after Darryl was taken out, where he really settled in as the number six guy, you know, played 15, 20 minutes a night alongside alongside Babchuk. I mean, I think he steadied that back end a little more than he's gotten credit for.
Yeah.
I mean, I think once the top four was kind of set into place and they acquired Babchuk, I think there was a question mark there. Party came back from injury. He settled in. You know, he played very, more than adequately next to Babchuk. When he's out on the ice, I feel okay that he's out there. And I think you need to have that sixth guy who doesn't cost a lot. He takes up space. You can run him out on the PK. I mean, I honestly think that I was concerned when he got hurt a little while ago that when you have to start running Mikkelsen or, you know, you knew Steos was going to get in there, that was going to be a major problem. And, you know, having that number six guy is important.
Yeah. And I'm not suggesting he's a 1-2 guy by any stretch of the imagination. I think he could probably top out at maybe a 5, or I mean, sorry, rather a 4.
I think there's a real possibility if he resigns here, he could be the 4 defenseman next year. I don't think that's out of the question.
The thing with giving him an incomplete, I think, is probably a little silly because he's played like half the season. Yeah, I think he's been just fine. B minus, sure. Okay. Let's call it that.
Sure, we'll average it out to a B minus. Next guy, TKO, Tom Kostopoulos. So I've actually been really impressed with Kostopoulos in his role here. He's been playing penalty kill. I mean, he's not a defensive liability in any stretch of the imagination. And so I'd be willing to give him even maybe a B plus.
Costo's been fine. Like he's not a guy when he's out on the ice, you know, playing fourth line minutes. Out on the PK, I'm content that he's going to play that role. He's not going to cost the Flames anything major. He obviously, you know, having him punch Kevin Bieksa in the nose was fun to watch. The problem is, like, the thing to me is, like, a guy like Kostopoulos on this team is part of the problem as opposed to part of the solution. He's that fill space guy. And, you know, I was concerned that was what Jackman was going to be at the start of the year, too. We'll obviously talk more about him later, but he's turned out to be a hell of a lot more than a fill space guy. Again, like, find guys who you can develop to play those fourth line minutes. If you coach them well enough, you can do that. And this is a thing where, like, there's just no great advantage to having, you know, an 8-goal scoring penalty killing 32-year-old on your team. I guess as we're grading players, like, it's not Kostopoulos' fault. The guy's earning some money and he's trying to play in the NHL, and good for him. So I guess I'll give him a C for being an average player and doing an average, a good job of being an average player. But when he runs out on the ice, it just reminds me that there's nothing in the tank.
Yeah, I give him maybe a C+. I think he's excelling at all the things that he's being asked to do, excelling, not just sort of being average at what he's being asked to do. But again, yeah, I mean, he's apparently just under $1 million. And, you know, you can get any number of players to fill that role. Younger players that have a higher ceiling that, you know, you can give some experience that can play. Like Boma is a good example.
No, Boma's 11 years younger.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm not saying, is he going to make the same, you know, the same quality decision with the puck every time for the first 40 games he's in the league? Probably not. Can you coach him into the position where he is very soon and then get a way bigger upside next year? 100% you can. And I don't think you're going to lose games because of that decision.
Yeah, I
agree. Not that many.
Yep, exactly. So, I mean, Kostopoulos is really the remainder, the last, him and I guess Hagman and Stajan, last bit of the FNUF trade.
Well, we will talk eventually about the FNUF trade and what's happened, but it's just spiraled downwards ever since it's happened. Like, it's just ridiculous. But, so Kostopoulos, I'm hearing a C+ for him. So next guy is actually Babchuk. You just brought him up, and makes sense. They both played the same amount of games as they came over together. But Babchuk, I mean, when he first came over, I was definitely not impressed in terms of his defensive ability, which is, you know, important because he's a defenseman, and he makes some pretty glaring mistakes that most NHL defensemen wouldn't make. But he has been pretty valuable in the power play recently, and he's been getting some pretty good point totals. Like, I think he's at 27 now for the year, and I think 17 of those are coming here. So I probably give him a C, solid C, maybe a C minus.
I'd go higher. I mean, I'd give him a B minus. Yeah. And he kind of says, I mean, he as a number five guy with the offensive upside. I mean, he's sort of a lot of what I say of a party is like when he's out there, I'm not like, well, they're going to get scored against. And, you know, when you can ask, I mean, think about the guys they try to run out on that point in the last couple of years. You know, they tried Kotelik back there, any number of other forwards. Ian White was not that effective there on the power play in either year. Bomeister is just not a guy who's going to produce a lot of points in the power play from the point. The only guy who's worked lately has been Giordano. And now all of a sudden you can run Babchuk out there and expect that he's dangerous.
Yeah.
Not that the Flames power play has been, you know, anything to talk about at all, but at least with Babchuk, you got a threat. I mean, this is a guy who gets more goals than Dion Phaneuf does these days. Anyway, I'm just saying for the cost and for, you know, the role they're asking to play. I don't know. I've not been unimpressed with Babchuk.
He's perfectly good. He's a good like second unit power play defenseman. You can shoot the puck through a wall. It's a very important quality to have, I think, on some level. And again, he's not been a liability. I think he's like a plus nine or something this season, which granted, you know, that's not the best measure, obviously, but it's a stat I have in front of me, certainly. And he's been perfectly good. And I don't think, you know, you could really ask for a lot more out of a guy that's playing 15 minutes a night.
I'm hearing a B for Babchuk then. Next guy is Moss. And I've actually been really impressed with Moss this year. He's scoring at the greatest points per 60 minutes rate on the team. So I'd be giving Moss an A. And plus, he plays pretty tough competition.
You were going to give an A plus for a second.
I was going to go A plus, but then I thought a little bit better of it. So I'm going to go Moss with an A.
Like, I think it's probably a stretch, like putting on the second line like you've had lately. But I mean, there's no question he's earned it based on this team. You know, you look at some things like his shooting percentage is 14, which is obviously a pretty high point. But he gets so many of his goals from in close that, you know, you can understand why. Again, not a liability defensively at all. In fact, he's a positive. He plays hard every shift. He's one of those guys who does not ever, he just doesn't make that many mistakes. And when you can add, you know, a point every other game to that mix, I mean, that is an awfully valuable player on your team. And, you know, I think Kent loves this guy and wrote a ton of stuff about him 2 years ago when he was really tearing it up for a while. And then with the injuries and the problems last year, the beginning of this year, I think, you know, I was concerned that he was never going to get back to that level and it might have just been a short period of time. But boy, I think, you know, you got to take a look at, you know, that period of time right before the resurgence where Moss and Jackman were driving most of the offense for the team, and he's carried that on through the resurgence. And that's just an impressive performance from a guy who has had some trouble. So Moss, A minus.
A guy who won the inaugural Hit the Post Dream Crusher Award.
That's right. Of course.
Yeah, I thought he was going to amount to absolutely nothing. But you know what? I'll say it. I was wrong. He's done well.
Yeah, I mean, A minus at least. And just for his form lately, certainly you have to really appreciate everything that he's been doing. He's like fourth or fifth on the team in goal scoring. I don't think anybody would have said that at the beginning of the year. So good for him.
Backlund is the next guy. So Ryan,
he's fine, like B minus, C plus kind of guy. He hasn't really gotten the shot that he probably deserved, because I think he probably, you know, accidentally injured somebody in the front office's mom or something like that, because there's no reason that he shouldn't have gotten more of a chance than he has to this point. But he hasn't really produced a ton. I don't know. Like, you see flashes of what I think they saw when they drafted him, but granted, he's still young, but he hasn't put it all together yet. And he's been about what I expected. So yeah, let's say a C plus or whatever.
The disconcerting thing, I think, to me about Backlund is that the flashes of which you speak is exactly what they did see. And I think his entire career has been based upon, you know, these moments of really great, you know, hockey plays, and then surrounded by...
He's a young Curtis Glencross?
I guess, maybe, yeah. But, he has these really, like you said, these flashes of greatness, and then, you know, a lot of kind of average play. I think he's improved defensively. I think that he looks way better on the back check than he did even a year ago. And I think he's improving. I think there's no doubt that he's getting better as a hockey player, as a well-rounded hockey player. Yeah, I mean, he still has a long way to go. Daryl Sutter, I think it's interesting. He often said last year that Michael Backlund wouldn't play in the Flames lineup if he wasn't in the top six. And he's never really, other than, you know, a few shifts here and there, played in the top six. So I don't know what that says, but
it's a tough environment for Michael Backlund to, like, get to develop. I don't know that. I don't think Abbotsford is a better environment for him to develop it. I'm not suggesting that. But the way that the Flames decide to structure their team, and they have for a long time, makes it difficult for a forward, particularly a center, who is primarily a value for his potential offensive ability to make a dent. And with Brent Sutter, they put a high premium on playing in all three zones and for making the responsible play. And a guy like Backlund's greatest talents, as identified, were creativity and his ability to step out and make glorious plays. Now, long term, is this potentially better for his career if he can become a three zone player and learn when to put that stuff into effect? Maybe so, but from the expectation that you get from watching guys like Matt Duchene on a Colorado team with no expectations and a rookie head coach given a chance to just do what he wants to do. I mean, if I'm Michael Backlund, I'm going to probably come a longer way from a points perspective if I'm on that team. The assessment that Aaron had has been completely accurate. There have been flashes. You wonder why you don't necessarily see them more often. And then at times I say, I kind of like that he's playing on a line where he's the fourth line for the Flames has been generally quite good in the last couple of months. Like you've had, some combination of Backlund and, Kostopoulos and, before we had a run of injuries there, you had Jackman. And those three guys, I think the Kostopoulos, Jackman, the one thing I'll say for having Kostopoulos around is they kind of protect him a little bit, because they're responsible players and they can let him do his thing. And he is capable on occasion of making plays happen on his own. And it turns out Jackman's got some skill too. So it's been one of those things where I think he's progressed from the start of the year. I think he's progressed more slowly than he might have with other teams, but I'm kind of happy he's around. I hope he has a higher top end than Kobesu. This is another guy from the Sutter era of the team that I might kind of compare him to.
Sarich.
The best nights he's had this season are the ones where you go, hey, what did Corey Sarich do tonight?
I think he's serviceable. I think he's okay.
He's underwhelming and he's overpaid. And
I think the problem is his age, his paycheck.
And I mean, he gets a decent amount of minutes a night. He doesn't get a ton, but he certainly plays more than he probably should. I'm not a Corey Sarich fan. I never have been. When they first got him, I remember I remember this specifically, that I was covering a NASCAR race for the newspaper I used to work for, and I was not paying attention to the race at all for obvious reasons. And it was July 1st, and so they signed him for however long it was, 4 years, and I was just like, I can't fucking believe that this is happening to me. I never got it. I never thought he was any good at all, except for that hit on Marlowe, which was awesome.
that was
incredible. Sparked the whole comeback and all that, but that was two, three years ago now, so we're going to go D on Corey Sarich.
I think that's pretty much, that's his best skill, is he does hit appropriately, I think, unlike where I think Dion really takes himself out of the play when he hits. I think Sarich makes good hits. I think he's all right. I mean, I'd give him a bit higher than a D. I'd give him maybe a C-. I think his paycheck, I think that's my biggest problem with him. If he was a $1.5 million player, I think he'd be a great number four. I think he's okay. I don't think he does anything exceptionally well, but I don't think he does anything exceptionally terribly.
It's tough to judge. I mean, it's tough to judge players based on their contract and their performance. I mean, I guess that comes into play and it is what it is. But, I mean, the thing with Sarich is, I think you'd rather have him play on a 5-6, which I think you've all said already. I completely agree with that. I think you'd rather not pay him $3.6 million. I think you'd rather pay him $2 million. I think he's a guy who makes the right decision most of the time with the puck, and then he has those bizarro. He has about a half dozen games a year where it's he forgets how to play hockey. It's one of those guys. The thing is, he also, to a certain extent, allows Mark Giordano to do what he wants on the ice because they're paired together. I really think the way that Brent's got the defense actually paired right now has been A, consistent for 30 games, which is the first time I can remember that in since Playfair. And two, it's actually worked out. I think that the Sarich Giordano pairing has been better than I expected it to be. It's been relatively consistent. I think it's worked out. Now, considering where Sarich was at the beginning of the year, which was healthy scratching, to being pretty much the clear number four guy on the team is a fairly impressive move. And I think Sarich is a B- this year. If you take the contract aside, I think that's fine for him.
Okay, so the next three guys are kind of grouped together in terms of performance this year: Stajan, Hagman, and Bork. So I think they're all peas in a pod and for me, and I think this year, relative to the expectations for all of them and relative to their contracts, I don't think anything above a D plus is really, really feasible.
Has anyone else thought Stajan's playing better lately?
Yes.
He has.
Yes.
I mean, this is the thing is when he was, I mean, and Grant, at the beginning of the year, he was terrible at the start of the year, and he got into that slump, and it was, and he was just, and you could tell he knew he was in a slump, and he lost his way. He was like, there was going to be the first line center that didn't work out. And then he was going to be second. They got hurt, and he had the injury problem after having a good camp, and it just was terrible. And then it's like when he came back from being a healthy scratch for a while and just sort of settled in, it's like the pressure's gone off and no one really pays attention. And I think quietly he's become a guy who could be counted on for some pretty quality minutes and has actually made – I mean, he's probably settled into the kind of player he really is. Point every other game, plays – like, I mean, it's the Flames run like a third-line center out every bloody shift. And you know, when he's – because he is legitimately right now the third-line center, it really suits him.
Yeah, he's obviously overpaid for a third-line center. But, I mean, I always liked Matt Stajan when I lived in Toronto. Like, I thought he was like a solid guy. Like, again, nothing really over-the-top amazing and nothing really terrible. But, and yeah, so third-line center is exactly probably where he should be, in which case his paycheck is obviously too much.
Anybody got any disagreement with the D grade or D plus grades I got on those three?
I'd give him like a C minus.
I'd say C minus, just based on the recent play. Like I said, like okay. Based on the fact you're three quarters of the way through the season now, I mean, I would have given him an F for the first half, but he's made it. You know, I think it's a C minus based on on the recent run.
Okay, cool.
No, I'd actually say Hagman. I think has been a little bit worse than both Bork and Stajan this year. Just don't get much from him most nights, and I think that for a guy with maybe his skill level, you probably expect a little bit more. He's only got 9 goals this year. That's less than Tim Jackman. But
in saying that, Jackman's being used in an effective way, whereas Hagman's just still getting tossed out wherever they can find a spot for him. You know, like,
well, plus,
like,
I don't think Hagman's not going to create on his own. I mean, he's kind of like the poor man's Phil Kessel problem. Hagman's not going to go, you know, you can't run out Hagman out there on the fourth line and have him create opportunities, whereas Jackman just bulldozes his way through and creates opportunities for himself.
He ends up in front of the net and he's tipping in shots, you know, or, you know, like he's big and he's going to the sweet spots and he's making things happen. I don't think that Jackman necessarily is a skill guy. I think he's bulldozing his way to the net.
Jackman is not a skill guy. He is not a skill guy. It's. But you're right. That's exactly what he's bulldozing his way. He's got, you know, he's got sheer will to do stuff. I mean, you look at the goals he scores where he's standing on the outskirts of the crease and is just pounding stuff in, or he just drives his way through a smaller defenseman. I mean, that's what you. We're not talking about Jackman right now. What I'm saying is Hagman can't do that. Every once in a while, he shows these sort of bits of determination where he fights the puck along the boards, wins it, and then fires. He's got a really great shot that he just doesn't get off often enough.
Yeah, I kind of wonder, like, I don't know, if there's something else going on with Hagman. Just hasn't been right since he's been here. Like, Toronto was a terrible team, but he was performing better than he has been since he's been in Calgary. But yeah, he just seems to struggle every game.
Hagman D plus, Bork and Stajan C minuses?
Or
Hagman D and then Bork D plus.
We didn't talk about Bork
Stajan
at all, but I think that's probably par for the course, right?
Exactly. He disappears. We don't have to talk about him.
Well, the problem, and he really has, you got to look at, I mean, you take a look at this team now. I mean, dude's a minus 12. He's been in a slump now for what, 2 months? He's contributed almost nothing to the recent streak aside from being strong in the shootout.
He scored a sweet empty netter the other night.
Oh, yeah. Really, really sick.
I don't know, man. I in terms of disappointments lately, he's been high on it. I mean, still a guy with 17 goals, and you can't discount that 17 goals is not nothing in this league. But to say now that he's a C minus or a D plus, when after the first 20 games you'd be, this is an A minus guy, says a lot about how bad his season's gone lately.
Yeah,
I said recently to somebody, he's the only player who's regressed since Daryl left. It's like Daryl understood him, and without his guidance, he just doesn't know what to do.
So the next four guys, Tanguay, Jackman, Giordano, and Morrison. And I don't think that I'm going to get any arguments if I say they've all been A players. Yeah, especially in terms of what they're making salary-wise and what they've done on the ice.
I think BMO, he's good, don't get me wrong. And I mean, he's making very little money. And again, like for me, it doesn't always come back to the paycheck. But you do have to, like for me, it reflects the, like what they're making does reflect if they're overpaid or underpaid, if they're performing to the contract or outperforming the contract. And for me, he's definitely doing, for what he's getting paid, he's definitely doing, he's going over and above. But I mean, of those guys you just mentioned, he's the only one that's sort of suspect. Once in a while, he definitely has bad passes and bad plays, and you just kind of wonder what he's thinking.
before the point with the Ginla Tange too, it's not like he was really tearing it up. I mean, he's benefited from his line placement, and you know, and his line mates have benefited from it too, because Ginla has not played as well this year with players other than Brendan Morrison. And for that reason alone, I mean, you know, I'll give him a B plus. But Aaron, you know, your statement's correct. I mean, it's just, you know, based on what you'd want out of a player like Brendan Morrison, who you signed the day before the season starts, I think a B plus is pretty good.
So, Tange, 1.7 second leading point producer on the team. I think that warrants an A. Giordano's been the most consistent and probably the best defenseman on the team this year also.
I got me a Giordano jersey with a Captain C on the front. Yeah. I think I'd give him an A.
Gio's an A. The other thing I'll say is, and as much as I said, you know, Sarich allows Gio to, you know, run around a bit, if you put Gio if you had him with Bomeister on a nightly basis, he'd have more than 27 points.
And then Jackman. Yeah. Jackman this year for 550K coming in and doing what he's done.
That's an A+.
Really?
I think so.
Oh, yeah.
What is
he
not doing right now?
Point. Okay, let's go Jackman.
They're running him out on the power play now, for God's sake.
Well, but
and rightfully so. I mean, they're running him on the power play and he's producing.
Well, his job on the power play is to just stand in front of the net and be big, right?
But still, nobody's done that for years. That's the thing. The Flames have not had that guy, or have not, you know, designated that guy for years, and they've needed the guy in front of the net. Like Bertuzzi, I remember thinking, why is this guy not just standing in front of the net? Like, he was chasing the puck always on the power play. It was killing me.
He's a useless shithead. That's why Bertuzzi wasn't.
But he's good for standing in front of the net, right? He's a big guy. Just like that's his job, he's fairly good at.
Well, he likes taking the abuse. He likes the idea that he can score goals. I mean, and you know, the thing is, like, he's outproducing his whole career at this point by a substantial amount in terms of what you can expect from him. And this includes, like, I mean, you go back, you look at Tim Jackman's stats going back into, like, his, you know, his minor days. Like, this is a guy who was never, like, a really serious point producer at any point. He just didn't do it. That wasn't his game. He's a guy who, you know, did not produce a lot of points. And all of a sudden now you're looking at a guy who has found a way to start scoring. Because he's been put in a position to do it well.
I got an A+ for Jackman, A and A for Tange, or A for Tange, A for Giordano, and an A- for Morrison. So I think that's probably good.
The other thing I think you want to add, I'll say one more thing about Tange because we barely got to talk. We're talking a lot about the crap players, and now we're going to good players. Yeah, they're all A's. They're fantastic. I think, I mean, again, like,
I love
Jerome Ginla's. We haven't talked about Ginla yet. I think Tange's ability to bring sort of the joy. Ginla's played incredibly in the last 10, 15 games. Like, he's shown that play along the boards. Like, he's shown, like, the kind of drive thing. And it helps that they're winning. Like, when the Flames win, Ginla plays better. I mean, you know, it's obviously one of those two things go together.
Okay, well,
I don't think any small part to play in that, and that's a huge deal.
Hold on to that stuff about Ginla. But so we'll just move on to Regier and Bomeister quickly here. And once again, I mean, I guess the majority of the season they've been playing together. And once they did get that pairing together, Bomeister's game went up and Regier's game went up.
Although they do get scored on all the time.
See, but I was looking at the plus minuses today, and I know I hate plus minus. It's a flawed statistic, but they're both plus. Like, I think Bomeister's plus 8 and Regier's plus 10.
Yeah, it could be special teams. I don't really pay attention. Well, I just know I look when there's goals against, I'm like, who's on the ice? Who's on the ice? And it's always Regier and Bomeister.
So Bomeister's
and they play 75% of the PK.
Agreed.
And the other thing is Regier or Bomeister's zone starts are terrible. I mean, if there is a situation where they need something going on in their own zone, they're going to have those two out there since they put them together.
Sure. And qual comp and time on ice, like, they play a ton and they play against the toughest, right?
So the best players, just, yeah. They get shitty zone starts. They're the fact that they're plus players despite all that, it's pretty crazy, and obviously more points than Fanouf.
To me, Robin Regier is an A, and I don't like. All this talk of all the guys who you like, for all this talk about trading Regier, to me, that's the guy you do not want to trade.
We saw earlier in the season when they played that game in Montreal how shitty the defense looked with him out. Like, just those.
Remember when he went out in the playoffs last year? Useless, or 2 years ago? Useless. He is the absolute backbone of that defense. I don't think he's slowing down. It's not like he's worse than he used to be.
No,
he's the same player he always was. He's inexpensive at $4 million for as far as I'm concerned. And Jay Bomeister, who they signed to a $6.7 million a year contract, was not living up to potential till they paired him with Robin Regier.
I agree.
I'm sorry. It's just because he has one goal in the year, and because he doesn't skate like Jay Bomeister does, people think he's not that valuable. It could not be more wrong. This is a guy who does all the fundamentals right, who players hate playing against, and is an important team guy as well. Like, I just don't, like, not nearly enough people talk about how valuable Ron Bergeron is to the team.
Yeah. So, Reggie, we'll go with an A, and then Bomeister with an A-minus just because of his early season struggles, I guess.
I would have said B-plus, but yeah, that's fair.
Okay. It does scare me a little bit that Jabo's never played a playoff game.
I know. Yeah, he comes to the team, and they don't make the playoffs.
It's a team game, obviously. I know, but I just...
And he was on some shitty...
Absolutely.
Team. Like, I mean, Florida's terrible.
It's true, but he's 27 years old. It's a little disconcerting.
Nine of those years of his life with a goddamn terrible organization. Like, the whole organization is awful.
I'm not arguing that. I'm just saying it's a bit scary.
Well, I'm sure that eventually he will get into a playoff game, but he will probably perform the exact same way that he would in the regular season.
Agreed.
It's also, you know what, I'll give him an extra letter grade just for because he's one to watch skate.
Yeah.
He's a great skater. And a great passer.
Yeah. So we have Glenn Cross and Jokinen now, the next two. And I'm going to be controversial with both of these, I think, both these grades. I'm going to give Jokinen this is going to sound so bad coming through. I'm going to give him a B+, actually.
Is that because of last night?
Agreed.
Not necessarily just because of last, not last night, but because he's making $3 million this season. He's been put into tough situations. And I mean, I still hate the guy. He's fucking brutal. But what he's been able to do this year, especially now with Glenn Cross and Moss on his line, I think that warrants a B+. And then Glenn Cross, I'm actually going to go lower because I'm going to go with a C+ for Glenn Cross. Even though he's second on the team in goals, he does some stupid fucking shit. Like once in a while, he takes a stupid ass penalty and it costs the team a game. Like it costs that game against Anaheim.
I have satellite radio, so I get the Peter Marr broadcast.
Yeah, it's so rich.
It's fun. I haven't had this in years. I'm so rich. No, it came free with my new car.
Oh, cool.
It's a new car.
And it's been fun.
So rich with the new car.
And typically when I listen to these Peter Barber records is when I'm driving home from playing hockey. And so I don't know why I'm telling the story in such a long-winded way, but I was listening to a Rob Kerr post show recently, and they had Rob Kerr talking to Mike Rogers. And they go, and Rob Kerr asked Mike Rogers, you know, it was after one of these games where Glenn Cross had, like, was just owned the game. He tore it up. It was one of these recent games. He had two goals. He completely owned it in the third period, was their best player by 1,000 miles. And Rob Kerr goes, what is it? I heard the coaching staff kind of talked a lot about, why is it that Curtis Glenn Cross can't do this game in, game out? And Mike Rogers told some story about how that's what the coaching staff is wondering. They talk to him. They go, you're so good. Why aren't you good all the time? And it just he's just a flake. And it's such a weird thing because it's true. Like, when he wants to play, he is crazy good. He's got as good a shot as anyone on the team. He can skate. He can hit. He can be in the right place at the right time. He can kill penalties. It's all there. And then he, like, hits a guy from behind for no reason. And or he just completely takes a game off and doesn't do anything. It's just – it is so bizarre. And so, you know, the assessment and the fact you have to give him a mark that's a little bit lower based on the skill level is completely fair. You got to be able to put it together at some point.
There are just some guys like that, though. I totally agree. Like I say, there's just some guys that are going to be really, really good. Some nights, like you say, just completely take over a game, two goals and an assist, whatever. And then other nights, they're just going to be minus threes and they're going to have played like shit and taken stupid penalties and all that. And you got to kind of take the good with the bad. There's not that you guys will have any idea who this is, but I'm going to tell the story anyway. there is this guy that used to play for my college's hockey team, and he's one of the few players that broke 100 points in his career. There's only been like 20 in the history of my college, and he was one of them. And there would be nights where he would just be completely dog shit, and then there would be nights where he would get four goals, like breezily get four goals, could bomb it on the power play, all that stuff. And I've always compared Curtis Glenn Cross to him in my mind. Just there's that kind of player, and they have a place. I mean, you have to kind of take the good with the bad when it comes to those guys, because when they're good, they're really good, and they're going to win you a bunch of hockey games.
I know. You know, you tell that story. I many moons ago when I covered junior hockey, I covered the team called the Kootenai Icers. A player named Zdeněk Blatný, who was drafted by the Boston Bruins and got like a cup of coffee. There were games where he was so much better than everyone else on the ice. He dominated physically. He was more skilled. He could shoot from anywhere. He earned his way to a third round draft choice. And I was just convinced that he was going to put it all together at some point. But he was one of those guys too where, you know, it could be a playoff game and they could be, you know, it could be for, you know, it could be a playoff game that you have to win. And he would just like not just sort of take the game off. And you could tell he was just taking it off. Made no sense.
I was going to say that it's actually kind of appropriate that Jokinen and Glenn Cross, that Justin's paired these two together, because they are both dominant at some times and completely invisible at other times, and also take the most ridiculous penalties all the time. So I don't
Ole Jokinen more points than Phil Kessel.
Fuck Phil Kessel.
He had a beauty tonight, though.
Yeah.
Cass did.
Unfortunately for everybody in the
world.
But
fortunately for me, because I have him on my fantasy team.
Oh, okay.
Somebody tweeted this hilarious thing. Kessel scores, ergo Versteeg was terrible in the room.
Of course.
That's exactly the way it happens.
Versteeg was a minus one tonight and did not have a point. So clearly this is the best day in Toronto sports history.
Yeah.
Are they on the streets, Duncan? Are they parading?
Touch them all, Phil. That's what I say. Touch them all.
People are pretty happy about tonight's victory.
They really should be, too. It was a good game out of Toronto. I was very impressed. Reimer made a couple of well, anyway, who cares? But, yes. Ole Jokinen, A-minus, for sure.
There's so many. I mean, it's awesome that he's totally pimping out my website, our website. I mean, he hits so many posts that, really, he is the unofficial spokesperson for Hit the Post. Yeah, I don't know. He's been terrible. He's been good. Last night, he was great. I'm still anti-Jokinen.
Oh, same with me. But, I mean, you can't really deny what he's done this year, though.
Yeah, you know, he didn't start well. So,
well,
you know,
nobody started well, right?
It's the same deal. It was ever since Daryl left. Is it really mid-November? I mean,
in mid-November, he's been at like 0.92 points per game.
And that's when he moved down from Ginla's line again to the second line.
Yep. I've seen a market, absolutely a market improvement.
And that's
since
it. And that's it.
I start playing with it. Yeah.
So. I think
he's still a piss off. He's still a huge piss off.
Oh yeah. So just in the amount of times that he makes me swear, I'm just going to give him a B plus for that. So
I
think
give
B plus.
Well, I will. You spend a little time reflecting. I've spent less time lately cursing his name than I did in the first 14 months of forced.
So Jokinen B plus and Glenn Cross C, and then we move on to our last guy, everybody's favorite, Ginla, and I mean. I'm gonna give him an A plus.
That's
just
Justin's
just
favorite.
It's fucking Jerome.
That's Justin's favorite. That's not my favorite.
Well,
it's not everyone's
whatever.
Favorite.
Everybody loves the guy. Let's just go with that. Okay, if you don't love Ginla, you're a horrible person. I'm gonna make that declaration.
Yep, a horrible.
Right now.
That's actually true.
Right now.
I really like Ginla.
Do you don't love him?
He's definitely the whole. I mean, everybody makes such a big deal of this Daryl Sutter thing. I really think it has nothing to do with anything. I think perhaps if Daryl Sutter leaving the front office has anything to do with the team starting to win, it's that he's not making decisions, coaching decisions anymore. I don't know if that actually is true, but I'm thinking that perhaps Brent actually has control over what players are played and what they're doing on the ice. And if that's the case, then I think, I don't know.
I think you've got to give Ginla B plus because he was terrible for the first 20 games. I mean, you watch Ginla lately, he's like same Ginla that you come to expect, but you cannot play that way for the first 20 games when you're in it. Well, you're right. It was the same thing with and I think that there's got to be something to the idea that that Daryl was force feeding the Jokinen and Ginla thing on Brent, because with the exception of like two or three shifts, it had to have been happening. It's like, no, it's going to work. It's totally going to happen. Since Daryl's left the team, Brent's put together a consistent group that I think has known on a night to night basis what it's going to expect. Daryl was clearly a presence on the team around the team on a regular basis. He was a guy who coached all of the players. There was something to it. That guy was like I was writing about Daryl Sutter being a cancer 3 years ago.
So was I.
It's not saying he's a terrible hockey man. It's not saying that he doesn't know what he's doing. It's saying that he is a toxic personality. You can tell that from every time you watch him. You can tell that from the way he approaches other people. And you can't have that thing around a hockey team for too long. It just ain't going to work after a certain period of time. And the other thing is, I know Brent Sutter's a better hockey coach than he showed in that first bit of time. I watched Brent Sutter coach the Red Deer Rebels, a terrible Red Deer Rebels team, into the playoffs, and then turn that team into a Memorial Cup champion in a couple of years. I got no concerns at all with Brent Sutter's ability to coach a hockey team, and he was not doing the things I'd expect Brent Sutter to do in the time that Daryl was also with the club.
Along the same lines as Jokinen with Ginla, I just looked it up. 3 goals and 9 points in his first 17 games.
Brutal.
22 and, 45 in the following, I'm not great at math, 42 games. So... once again, you get those two away from each other, and they become excellent. So I'm gonna say B plus, because I think we expected more out of Jerome than we did Jokinen, And so relative to expectations and whatever, you can't, like you say, you can't take the first 17 games of a season off like he did when everybody was saying, is this it for Iginla? And at the time, justifiably so.
That's like, you're right. That was justifiable, 100%.
What did you say?
3 goals and 9 points in the first 17 games, and shitty 3 goals, too. I think at least one of them was into an empty net.
Yeah. Well, what did you say for his grade again?
Give me a B plus.
Okay, so
yeah, I'm B plus too.
I don't think my A plus is gonna bring him up to that A minus. So we'll
go. And with my A plus 9 pluses, that makes it an A plus.
Yeah, so I control everything. No, we'll go B plus with Iggy. So that's fair.
I'll say one more thing about Brendan Morrison.
Oh yeah, go ahead.
With regards to Iggy and Tanguay, just because I don't blog a lot now, so I can just talk. It's great. Maybe I should just get one of those voice recorders that translates. But anyway, the thing that Morrison's done on that line, the reason I think this has worked out generally well, is that Morrison and Jokinen was trying to get involved. And he was trying to do stuff, and then Stajan was working too hard to be a first line center. Morrison's a veteran enough guy that he just generally gets out of the way. Like, he gets points. Like, it's not like he doesn't touch the puck, because obviously he does. He's getting points right lately. But what he's doing is he's allowing Tanguay and Iginla to do the things that they do best. And, you know, he's making the veteran smart play with the puck. He's not trying to be a guy that's paying attention. It's hard to do when you've got dominant wingers. Like, that's an unusual deal. When you have two dominant wingers and then you just need a center to just kind of play a role. But Morrison seems to have been able to figure out how to do that. And that's the thing. When they first put him on there, I was like, Jesus Christ, Brendan Morrison's your first line center. What's happened to the Flames? But it's worked.
So next two guys, Carlson and Kiprusoff. I think we can probably just group them hand in hand. If not, you guys can debate why. But I think
B.
Is that an A?
He said B. Oh. So I would agree with Ryan in that assessment, in that Carlson making the league minimum has come in and has played very competently. And it, aside from McElhinney last year, like you saw him go on the ice and the players just kind of looked like they quit on him. Like, even before the game really started.
This is a guy who's managed to get the team points in 8 out of 13 games he's played.
Yeah.
I mean, that is not something that's happened since the days of pre-Philippe Sauvé. I mean, this is a good thing for this team, and I don't think you can put that. This is the thing. Mika Kiprusoff could potentially play fewer than 70 games this year, and you know, for that alone, I think you got to give this guy a B grade. Kiprusoff for me is a C. He's been good recently, but a 903 is not good enough, and you know, particularly playing in front of this defense, he could easily raise this up at the end of the year if he keeps playing like he has the last dozen or so games. But he's a C.
Overall, I would give the goaltending pretty much a B minus, C plus, something like that. Like you say, Kiprusoff. I think part of his struggles was the fact that the team was just dog shit for the first like third of the season. So it's tough to really hang too much of it on him. But at the same time, he really needs to be better. On the nights when he's bad, he's really bad. And so that's, I mean, you can't go from a 920 save percentage last year to 903 this year. You just can't do it with pretty much the same defense in front of you. So.
And Carlson, you can't complain. You can't complain with a backup that's just getting points.
I would agree with Duncan on the Kiprusoff thing with the C. I mean, yeah, he was pretty bad to start the season. As Ryan said, the entire team was awful those first 25 or 30 games, whatever. But, I mean, when you have a goaltender making 5.625 on the cap, you need him to be able to play those games where the team is playing like dog shit, and you have to have him to steal a couple of those. And he just wasn't doing that during the season. So I think a C for Kiprusoff is probably fair, and then a B for Carlson is probably good, too.
There you go.
The kindling.
So we move on to the last segment. Just a quick look ahead in the kindling for the games next week. And only two games. The game tomorrow against Dallas in Calgary, 7:30 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. And that should be a good game. I mean, Dallas is probably playing a little bit above what their true talent is this season. And I think eventually.
Not lately,
Ryan.
Did Brad injure?
They just got clowned out by Edmonton tonight.
They did.
Brad Richards is injured as well. Is that not correct?
I think it's only like a game or two, though. Like, okay. They were saying, he's just going to, it's maintenance type stuff.
All we need is one game off. That's tomorrow.
That's good. He has to stay alive because Toronto fans are clamoring to give him $8 million a year for over six at the end of the season to have him make Phil Kessel into the superstar he needs to become.
I'm just going
to
point this out, though. Like, they should have to forfeit the remainder of their games. They gave up a goal to Taylor Chorney tonight. So
Taylor Chorney.
I swear it's in the box score and everything. So
that's really
sad. I feel bad for Joe Nieuwendyk, except for that he hired Mark Crawford as coach.
How about Sean Avery? How about the Avery contract?
That was Brett Hall.
Sean Avery rules. I don't care what anybody says about Sean Avery.
I love Avery too. It was a bad deal for Dallas, though.
Ryan, you weren't there. We got to see with Dallas and Cat last time. In fact, the only time I've met Justin in person was at a blogger meetup in Calgary just before Christmas when the Flames beat Dallas in overtime in a shootout. We were all sitting there lamenting most of the night how the Flames were going to lose, and then they won in a shootout. So I have great memories of the Flames beating the Stars a couple of times this year, and I expect that to happen again.
Yeah, I would say so as well.
So, and then the big game on Sunday, the Heritage Classic, everything that all of us Canadians are excited about. Ryan, you Americans got your own Winter Classic down there, but WI.
Yeah, well, they're showing the Heritage Classic on NBC.
Oh, that's excellent. So,
oh, yeah.
You're able to watch
Versus. It's on Versus. No, they're going Versus, not NBC.
Oh, well, then that's not as appealing.
Nope. Oh, well, at least it'll be in HD.
This is true.
And in Canada, in 3D.
Indeed.
But we'll be going to that game, me and WI, so that'll
be
fun.
In attendance.
And we'll have a special, I guess, edition of the podcast next Tuesday with a couple of matchsticks and gasoline and Hit the Post regulars in studio.
I might be able to Skype in, but I will not be here.
Okay. But we'll move on to the Flameouts. Duncan, you got anything you want to mention?
I'm kind of glad the Flames are only playing a couple of games this week. I just want the games played numbers to even out a bit because I'm a little tired of watching the Flames have four games in hand on the Flames. I just want this is going to be a lot more fun to watch the end of the season, it looks like, than we expected. And I kind of want to get a better idea of where the team stands. It makes me uncomfortable every time I look at it.
Ryan?
I just want to say that I will reiterate what I said on Puck Daddy this week, and I found the Mario Lemieux remarks to be nearly as embarrassing as the game itself.
WI?
Forsberg crying was probably like one of the most amazing moments of my life. No. Sad to see Forsberg retire. Not surprising at all.
Yeah. Did you know his wife's only 23? Or his fiance is only 23?
Yeah, well, at least he's not gay.
Good work, Peter. Way to go, buddy.
Good work, Nicole Norden. That's what I have to say.
I don't know who that is. I'm assuming that's his fiance.
Yeah, exactly.
But apparently, he pointed a couple times. He told his fiance, Nicole, he would not put himself at risk on the ice.
See? He's sweet.
Whatever.
Okay, we're done.
Women are so weird. I still have to talk here.
I mean, we're done about Forsberg.
Okay. Like I said... Heritage Classic on Sunday. That'll be fun. Blogger meetup on Saturday. Cat and Fiddle Pub in the Northwest. That should be fun. If you're in town or whatever, come out. Come see how odd of a person I am in real life. How much I actually do swear in real life.
We're a good bunch. We're a good group of folks.
Good group, except I'm fucking
It's true. I'm sorry to miss it. I'll be there in spirit.
Okay. Well, maybe...
It's terrible.
Maybe WLI will send you live text updates.
So. That is almost guaranteed to happen.
depends how drunk I get.
That should be fun. So
that makes it more likely to happen.
That should be fun. Anyways, you can get us at matchsticksandmicrophones@gmail.com. Feedback, questions, comments, want to swear at us, whatever. That's all good. WI and Duncan on Twitter at HitThePost, hitthepost.ca. Ryan on Twitter at TwoLinePass, Puck Daddy, and Flames Nation. And I'm on Twitter at AzvitoJ, Fourth Line Blog. And we will talk to you next week.